Today I have the opportunity to talk with Richard Tibbles, who's both a co-founder and learning lead of the nonprofit Learning Equality, who's going to tell us a little bit about that organization and one of their biggest products that they've put out, which is KA Lite. So, Richard, thanks so much for chatting. I was hoping first you could tell us a little about Learning Equality.
So Learning Equality is focused on bridging the digital divide that faces a lot of people around the world. So there's been a huge explosion in interest in online learning and online courses as a way of delivering course content cheaply and effectively to people all over the world and to people who most need it. Unfortunately, 60% of the world still doesn't have any internet access. A significant proportion of the 40% who do have access are not on broadband connections, they're not using high-speed internet as many people are, who might be listening to this podcast are used to. And what we find is that actually those high-quality videos that people are making to teach you how to do machine learning or to help you understand algebra or arithmetic just aren't accessible to people who are predominantly in the developing world. And even people in rural parts of the US and Europe will have difficulty accessing these resources.
Right.
So Learning Equality is focused on creating tools to bridge that divide and bring those high quality learning resources to people who, one, need it most and do not have the access to actually get that content in an online setting.
Okay, and so now one of these tools that you kind of just alluded to would be KA Lite. Right.
Yes, so KA Lite was the first product that we've produced. So for KA Lite, we'd taken all of the Khan Academy videos and exercises. So Khan Academy is a website that covers the whole of the K-12 mathematics curriculum and also quite a lot of STEM content and also some humanities and economics and quite a broad range of content, but strongly focused on K-12 STEM and makes videos that describe and explain and get at conceptual and procedural learning, and also interactive exercises that give instant feedback, which is obviously really helpful when you're trying to learn something just by itself. That's something that helps people to learn better than doing some mathematics exercises in a workbook, handing them into their teacher, and then waiting 3 or 4 days, if they're lucky, to get some feedback on it. Right. So that sort of instant feedback is very helpful. So with KA Lite, we've taken all of those videos and all of those exercises and made them available in a platform that runs without an internet connection at all. So someone can install it, take it, download all the materials, and then take it completely offline and have it run offline without any need for any internet connectivity. People either then can access through a web browser on the same machine, so it's basically running a mini web server on the computer you're running it on, or they can access over a network, either a local wireless network or a local Ethernet, like in a sort of computer lab type setup, and then be able to access the materials through there. So they get that sort of web-like experience, but without needing an internet connection.
Very cool. Okay, and so what kind of settings has this been used in?
So there's been a big range of settings. Because we've focused on being able to run on almost any hardware, people have taken this in lots of different places, in lots of different directions. People have set it up on refurbished laptops in orphanages. So there's an orphanage in Cameroon where they installed it onto a bunch of refurbished laptops, set it up, had the older kids teaching the younger kids maths, but then actually something they didn't expect was people from the community then started coming in, and normally there hadn't been much engagement between the orphanage itself mm-hmm. and the community, but they started coming in because they saw this as a useful resource. They were teaching themselves using the computers, but then also teaching the kids in the orphanage as well
wow.
how to, like, and so it expanded this large range of peer tutoring. We've also done some implementations with groups in India. So we've had one group who have installed it with a sort of very low power server, just a $200 netbook, which and then that has a little Wi-Fi hotspot, and then all the students are using tablets, to cheap Android tablets that are about $60 each, to actually access the content over a local wireless network. And one of the nice things about having that laptop is that the teachers then have a device to then go look at how the students are doing. So another feature of K-Lite, which differentiates it from some other attempts that have been previously done to bring this content offline, is it actually has some of the analytics and tracking tools that can help make this these sort of online learning environments more impactful, because you can actually tell the teacher, this student is doing well, this student is having difficulties, these students, some people maybe you should look at to intervene and to help. And so that's been one place where having like more than just a server, having like a screen that the teacher can interact with, it's been very helpful.
Okay, so can you maybe say a little more about, first sort of what a user's experience would be like using K-Lite, and maybe even a little about the teacher's experience?
Yeah, so a user would log in, and then they would be able to navigate through all the Khan Academy content. They can watch videos. They'll then be you go into like a sort of topic tree hierarchy almost, and you navigate down, find the content you want to look at, and then you basically have a sequence of content that you can run through, starting and there may be videos to explain stuff, and then exercises that you can do to test your understanding of that, and then so on and so on, and you can then you'll get points. So very simple gamification mechanics seem to be helpful in this respect. So you get points as you watch videos, you get points as you complete exercises and master things. And although Khan Academy has a whole system of badges and lots of other like sort of gamification mechanics, we just stuck with doing points very simply. And it seems to be enough to get a bit of motivation going. I did actually play around with, there was a point where K-Lite actually had some randomized rewards in there as well to try to make learning more addictive.
And that does not exist anymore.
It had to get taken out just because we were, as part of the group in India who were deploying K-Lite, an economist was running a randomized control trial on top of that and was actually using the points as a reward mechanism for the students. So she didn't want randomized rewards in there to like occasionally have to give a student an extra pencil or an extra comic book. So that sort of disappeared, but I'd be interested in reinstating that, because obviously if we can make learning addictive, then that's...
Right. So this idea of points and gamification and even addictive learning, these are things that are pretty supported, right, by what we know about how humans learn?
Yeah, and there's actually been other... people have done things with this sort of neurogaming idea. So there's a guy in Bristol, whose name always eludes me, who's basically done some pretty good trials of doing this sort of uncertain rewards in the classroom. And one of the things is like it's very demotivating to actually do a completely uncertain reward schedule where you sometimes you just don't get any. But what seems to work best in practice is to always give a certain reward, but then sort of give a bump, and then just give a little bit extra every so often, and then sort of key into that uncertainty in the reward there. So there's some good evidence both in the rat models for these sort of uncertain reward schedules to be very, more addictive than very certain ones, and there's been some decent work actually in ecologically valid situations to see this working as well.
Very cool. Okay, so are there other aspects of kind of what we know about cognitive science, whether it's, you know, humans, the way they learn, or the way they interact with devices, that's gone into this?
So, although my background is obviously in learning sciences, there's been less of an emphasis on that in the design of K-Lite, but the sort of human-centered design has been very important. One thing that we've done iteratively over time is actually make sure that we understand what our users' experience is, what they're doing, how they're engaging with this. And this becomes really important because the majority of the people using our software are not people who use software. So we can't rely on the sort of standard paradigm. We can't rely on a lot of the sort of standard symbology or user interface tropes that sort of occur in most web design, because most of the people that we're serving have never used a website before. So we have to look at ways to make sure that what we're doing is very obvious and evident, or at least very easily learnable, and is effective for a huge range of people. So this is, we have installations in over 160 countries. So we're not designing for a single demographic.
Right.
We're designing for a huge range of people and people with different cultural backgrounds, people with different linguistic backgrounds. It's been translated into 15 different languages. Although the majority of deployments are still in English, because there are many countries in the world where the primary language of instruction is still English, even
right.
if that's not the language of the most commonly spoken language. And so we've got all of these, this huge range of people, and trying to make sure that we don't over-design and over-fit for one particular group.
Right, and that's something I think we can easily take for granted, is that a design is culturally tied, right?
Yeah.
And so that it's not necessarily equally interpretable. Okay, so, and how do you deal with that issue?
So we just have to make sure that, one, it's a matter of not making sure that we don't just grease the squeaky wheel. So if we get too much feedback from one group
yeah.
in one country, then we have to make sure that accords with the information we're
okay.
receiving from other groups, and generally looking around and seeing, okay, so these people in India are saying this, and these people in Guatemala are saying this. Well, what are the people in Nigeria saying? What are the people in Malawi saying?
Mm-hmm.
And making sure we get a good range of feedback. That in itself is its own challenge,
sure.
because all of these people are offline and generally don't have regular access to email. Like, if we're lucky, we find out who the people are who've actually done the deployments.
Right.
But very often, so we have, we've estimated we've reached about 2 million learners, and we probably are in contact with maybe 5 or 10%
wow.
of those deployments.
Yep.
So actually having direct contact that we can try to glean some feedback from.
Okay.
And so that's always a struggle. It's like, we're trying to reach the people who are hardest to reach, and once we get stuff to them, we don't hear anything back until it breaks. And apparently it doesn't break that much, so we're
great.
Okay.
Well, that's
or
step
if it breaks,
one.
They just give up. Like,
yeah.
That's the other alternative. It's not motivating enough.
So you have a background in education, both in teaching and now in researching, and I'm wondering if there are any really like kind of high-level things you've learned from working on this KA Lite project, or things that you feel like are kind of good messages about education in general, you know, even if we're not talking about these populations?
I think, for me, one of the biggest things from KA Lite is just seeing the power of that instant feedback. Like, it is so helpful for learning to be able to do stuff and instantly be told, this
yeah.
is right, this is wrong. And I think so little of our contemporary education system is built around giving that sort of instant feedback.
Right.
Anyone who's done any like learning paradigms or anything like that knows that if you're training someone in your experiment to understand like what a greeble is, like, they're not going to learn that unless you actually give them feedback.
Right.
Like, there has to be some sort of explicit or implicit feedback that actually helps them learn. And so much of education, there is none of that feedback. Like, if you think of the lecture model, where is the feedback in that loop? Well, pretty much you have to wait until you get to the exam to get some feedback.
Right.
And that's really too late.
Right.
So like that sort of instant feedback, I think, has been really valuable. I think the other thing has just been... So I've been very careful in how we've worked to make sure that we don't try to displace teachers.
Right.
I think there is a certain edge to some educational technology work where there's a sort of idea that we could get rid of teachers. If we could just get the automated tutoring systems and everything else working right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a mistake, because there are some things that computers do really well. Instant feedback on certain kinds of questions can be very, very helpful, and computers can do that so much faster and so much more efficiently than human teachers can. But there are other things that computers do not do very well, and therefore making sure that when we design these sort of learning systems, make sure that they support the interaction of the teacher
mm.
with the student. So there's been a lot of interest in the last 3 or 4 years in the sort of learning analytics sphere, where people are trying to work out how do we leverage the data coming out of these automated tutoring systems to do education better, basically. But it's still at a very early stage. Mm-hmm. They don't think people have a good sense of how this would look. But I think some of the strongest work is really focusing on this idea of the teacher as a diagnostic professional. And I think previously the problem that they've had in being at the sort of same level as, say, a doctor when it comes to being a sort of diagnostic professional is that they just haven't had the data to work with. And so there's never been the expectation, there's never been the training, there's never been the focus on helping teachers to really understand their students' learning paths in anything other than a very intuitive way. Like, standing in front of a classroom, you might think that little Jimmy is having problems understanding because he's staring out the window, but actually he's just bored because he knows everything you're saying already mm-hmm. and everything that you're doing. So that's one really big opportunity is to help teachers transform their profession and therefore maintain their relevance, but also make them far more effective in how students learn.
That's great, yeah. So I wonder if now if you have any long-term goals, so I'm assuming continue to do what you're doing, right? Continue to bring access to people who don't have it. Are there other kind of larger goals or?
Yeah, so the sort of next stage of what we're doing is sort of going beyond Khan Academy. So K-Lite was our sort of pilot project. We have had a huge impact with it, but we want to go further and we realize one of the things that one of the first pieces of feedback that we got from deployment partners was this: the Khan Academy content is great, but it's not quite enough for us. And so this comes back to recognizing that diversity of cultural backgrounds and linguistic backgrounds that our users are coming from. Khan Academy is predominantly designed for the US Common Core standards. Mm. Like, it started off just being K-12, and then Common Core came out, so then they dovetailed everything with that. And that just isn't how the curriculum is sequenced in a lot of countries around the world.
Right.
So what we're doing now is we're building our next generation product, Calibri, which is going to take all of the things we've learned through KA Lite and expand them to be able to support a much wider range of content, and also to allow people to sort of remix and rearrange content in a way that maps them to local curriculum.
Okay.
So that they'll be able to take all the Khan Academy content and be like, well, no, actually, we need the basic subtraction to happen here, we need to reorder this content and move it around, and then actually there's a gap here, so we should pull in some content from somewhere else that isn't Khan Academy and have that
cool.
be part of the sequence as well. And so that's what's going on there. We've had some preliminary pilots where we've done this sort of thing within K-Lite. So our first one was with a medical school in Rwanda, so we partnered with Stanford Medical School, who has been doing some work with Khan Academy, but they also have their own huge set of videos for doing medical education work, and they helped set up the first private medical school in Rwanda. And so one of our developers actually went out with them, helped them install a modified version of K-Lite that, as well as having all the Khan Academy content, also had all the Stanford medical content in it as well. So that's now like a huge resource for a new medical school in Gitwe, Rwanda, which is a city some distance outside Kigali. And so that was sort of one of our first forays. Then we've also worked with a group called War Child Holland, who are they work in basically in war-torn countries to try to help make sure that children are still having good standards of living, they have their basic necessities covered, they're still getting an education and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And so we worked with them to, they were doing a teacher training project, one of the issues they have is that in South Sudan, where this project was happening, there's about 25 kilometers of paved road in the entire country. So moving around the country is very, very hard. Mm. And South Sudan isn't small. Like,
right.
A significant chunk of just sort of Saharan and sub-Saharan Africa. And so they wanted to load all of their teacher training materials onto a tablet and send it with the teacher to be able to continue to learn and to gain more insight into teaching while they're away. So they brought them into the capital for training, and then sent them off with it. So we modified K-Lite, we bundled in their content, their teacher training content, and then loaded it onto an Android tablet as a standalone device, and then they were able to use that for 6, 7, 8, 9 months.
Wow.
Independently, without any interaction. So that's been interesting, and it's also, the teacher training angle has been one that's sort of cropped up repeatedly, because another problem that you have in developing countries very often is the teachers are very poorly trained.
Right.
People don't go into teaching, but they haven't been well prepared. Very often, either they lack both pedagogical and content knowledge.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of teachers report to us, and actually had some programs that are directly focused on just using the Khan Academy content to train people in their basic understanding of mathematics.
Okay.
Which is a little scary when you have people teaching fourth grade mathematics who don't know fourth grade mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
But then that also kind of happens in the US as well. So. So that was another one. We're currently working with another group to do a similar sort of thing, but they have a bunch of economic literacy content. So basically they're teaching kids starting from like 5 or 6 all the way up to teenagers how to handle money, how to manage money, to really sort of make them economically literate, so when they do go out and get jobs, they can make sure they're saving and like actually building sustainable resources for the future, rather than, because that's one area where people who are born into poverty tend to have more problems in order to pull themselves out of poverty, is how to effectively manage money, how to understand like different ways of using money and that sort of thing. So that's been another
cool. Wow. And I don't know if you have any other things you want to add, or where should people go to learn more about this?
So they can go to our website, which is learningequality.org.
Okay.
There we can read more about what K-Lite has done and what Calibri is going to be. One interesting thing about Calibri is that we're bringing in more of the sort of learning sciences stuff into there. There'll be some more intelligent sort of content recommendation, including hopefully some work based on spacing effects that Hal Pashley here at UCSD has done a lot of work on. But also looking at interesting work that's come out of intelligent tutoring system circles about effectively ordering content, finding dependencies between content, and then helping people to have a more... Because at the moment, the way that you navigate through is you go through the set curricular sequence that your teacher creates for you.
Yeah.
And obviously, you want to make that more intelligent and to actually push people down their own individualized learning path.
Mm-hmm.
And because ideally what we want is we want people who are in the most disadvantaged circumstances to have the most... have the best access to this technology to give personalized learning, because they're the ones who need that personalization more than much more homogenized classroom in a developed country, where people who have been struggling have been brought up a bit more. So you might have a span of a year and a half in of achievement in a developed country classroom, but in a developing country it could be 3 years, 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's one thing that we've seen, this has helped K-Lite. So K-Lite has also been used in the prison systems in the US. And in the prison systems in the US, you have in the education classrooms there, you have a huge range. So you have people who dropped out in like fourth or fifth grade, and like school is, they have terrible associations. Like the motivational impact of those points is really salient in those people, because they're like, I'm actually enjoying learning, it's fun. I always thought it was this terrible thing because I always failed at it. But then you also have people who have PhDs in nuclear science in the same classroom.
Amazing.
And so, being able to personalize that is incredibly helpful, and it really like is an important thing. So you have some similar sort of things in developing countries where you have a much broader range of people within a classroom, and so being able to make sure that we do the best job of personalization for the people who most need it is one of our really key focuses for Calibri, because we want to make sure it's that really good personalized learning experience.
Cool. Wow. Okay, well, thanks so much for taking this time. I think it was probably pretty inspiring, both for me and for the listeners. And I will put maybe your information and information for Learning Equality on the site so people can go find it.
Yep.
Great. Thanks again.
No problem.